Take a look at what happened. Oh.
I'm not supposed to be here tonight. Not supposed to be here.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
No?
Trump gave his first speech since the assassination attempt at his rally in Pennsylvania. Speaking at the Republican National Convention, it was also the night Donald Trump officially accepted the Republican presidential nomination. The lack of security, as well as who to hold accountable, still have not been answered. Well, at least to the satisfaction of the public. What has been done since the assassination attempt on July 13th, and why did it take a candidate to be shot for changes to be made to protect the President of the United States? I'm Sky Nell Hughes, and this is Perspective. Even with all of the advancements in protection technology, from what we at this time know, a 20-year-old white male named Thomas Matthew Crooks was able to climb a 5-foot ladder he brought to the roof of a building with a 50 rounds of ammunition and a high-powered assault-style rifle. Now, Crooks had also flown his personal drone over the rally site just hours before the rally in Butler, Pennsylvania. His Hyundai Sonata was close by, with an improvised explosive device in the trunk and attached to a transmitter Crook had with him. Now, exact details have not all been released, but during a contentious 5-hour House Oversight Committee, the Secret Service director admitted law enforcement was informed Crooks was on the roof, but nothing was done at the time.
I don't have an exact number to share with you today, but from what I've been able to discern, somewhere between 2 and 5 times, there was some sort of communication about a suspicious individual.
Well, the Secret Service director has now resigned. But Crooks was able to get off at least 5 shots, including the one that took a piece of President Donald Trump's ear off while he addressed the crowd just a few minutes into his speech. A slight turn of Donald Trump's head to look at a graphic not only saved his life, but saved the country from what could have been an extremely chaotic and dangerous time for the American people. Now, this is just a simple breakdown of the story, I can tell you. But as you can imagine, it's a lot more complicated. And the events that led up to the assassination attempt of Donald J. Trump did not start on that day or in that field in Pennsylvania. In fact, they started in an office in Washington, D.C., the highest office, the Oval Office. So let's bring in our panel for today's discussion. Jonathan Gillum, former Navy SEAL and FBI special agent, and Dominic Izzo, a former Chicago area police officer. Gentlemen, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. I want to start with you, Jonathan. Do you believe there was a flaw in the security given to former Donald J. Trump, and where was that?
Well, the whole thing was a flaw, and from the beginning to the end, the threat assessment was not done properly when they did the advance. I'm not even sure what advance they did. They did not work as a unit or a joint task force with local and state law enforcement. We're finding that out now. They were nowhere to be seen in the meetings. And when you look at the tactics that they used that day, they were horrible. If Donald Trump had sustained even a nick on an artery, he could have bled out before they got him into that vehicle and put a tourniquet on him. So everything that I saw from a protection standpoint, start to finish, was a disaster. But where I have the real problem is the timeline, because when you add the timeline to it and all the stuff that was going on with the suspicion, as the former director now says, the suspicion versus a threat, the way they continue to keep Trump on the stage was as if they wanted to create a funnel for this individual to get on that roof and take a shot. And I don't know if it was that specific shooter or if it was just any shooter. When you look at how bad the people were that they put up there, the threat assessment and the timeline, it creates a big arrow that says shoot here.
Well, and that's the interesting part, because obviously the Secret Service is tasked with protecting their the president. That's their number one job, not just bounce checks. And yet, there you are hearing some people say, well, it's because of the local law enforcement that we're involved in. And that's why I have you on here, Dominique, because you're an expert really in local law enforcement. In these situations, what role, who is the person in charge in these situations, the local law enforcement, the sheriffs, the police officers, even the state troopers, or is it the Secret Service and maybe even the FBI if they're on site?
It's Secret Service and FBI. Local law enforcement would be responsible for blocking off traffic and getting their coffee. When I saw this for the first time, and then we had press conferences that night from, I believe, the state police, it blew me away how even the state police were allowed to give a press conference on an active investigation. When it comes down to this, when you have the federal and municipal guys working together, even state and county, there's barely any communication. The orders are simple. They will not have you involved because your training is nothing like theirs. You don't work as a team together. You don't have it like if Jonathan, with his extensive background, and I were together, I would have no idea how to wind up working with him because our training is completely separate. So when I started to hear that they started to pass the buck on local law enforcement, that absolutely blew me away because the amount of municipal involvement or state or county would have been minimal at best, maybe perimeter guarding. That would be the bottom line.
Well, how many different groups of law enforcement are usually on one of these sites? And I don't know which one would probably better. I'm going to ask you that, Jonathan. How many different groups are there, and are they able to all talk to each other on a single channel?
That's a very good question. So I would say typically you're going to have, it depends on where you go. If it's a smaller town, you're going to have more state police there and probably the entire local police force, and maybe there's some surrounding forces that will take part. But if it's a bigger city, their police force, and again, you'll have state police, and then you may have task force officers that are there as well. You could have ICE agents that are there filling in for the dogs or for something like that, that they typically like to stay with Secret Service, or at least that's the way I thought, doing those particular things. And then you use the police as a blocking force, more or less. But as far as the overall communication goes, a lot of the times they will have a dedicated channel that they can share with the other departments. Is a little different now that it's digital than it used to be. So they can have a dedicated channel that everybody can use if there's an emergency. They go to that channel and do command and control, which they had at this event, but nobody apparently was using it.
Well, and that's the question, especially since they had identified this man multiple minutes before the actual shooting took place. You would think that it would have been a state of emergency to a certain extent. Which brings me to a question that either one of you can answer. I'm going to start with you, Dominic, on this. Who actually would be the one to give the directive? Or do you even have to ask permission? If somebody has and they are on the property where the president of the United States is speaking or the former president and has a gun on them, do they have to get permission to shoot? Dominic?
No, again, when it comes down to this, if it's going to be an event like having Trump speak I don't care if it's a small town or whatever, it's going to be run so flawlessly, you're not going to have. And I'm not trying to dump on local cops, but we've seen the quality of police officers on the street lately. You're not going to have somebody who has zero tactical experience, who maybe, you know, has an occasional traffic stop here and there from their town, involved in something that requires such precise tactics. So I can't imagine the Secret Service not coming in and briefing the living hell out of every agency for weeks or at least a couple of months ahead of time, saying, you're not going to do this unless we say so. This is the way this goes. End of story. And I don't think they're going to risk involvement for that. So when it comes down to local cops, again, I can't picture a local police officer being even remotely allowed to be in that area to engage a threat for screwing up whatever tactics the feds set in course. So, I mean, you would like to think that if you saw somebody active with a gun, but then, you know, since we don't know what the Secret Service does, how do they know it's not a plainclothes person that's standing guard? It's just too much in the mix. You can't mix municipal and federal with a couple of weeks worth of communication.
Well, it's interesting that they say that because Jonathan.
Yeah, that's what's interesting because as Dominic says, flawless, right? Typically, when you see the Secret Service or a protection detail, I should say, when they do their movements, like when they're moving through a crowd or he's on stage, you're going to see them standing there projecting strength. But when something occurs, it should be a flawless, rapid movement to get them in the vehicle and then see what injuries they may have and get them out of there as fast as possible, as flawlessly as possible. So that's a tiny little piece of that, and it was a disaster. And when you add into that other tactical units, which we're hearing that a local tactical unit took a shot as well as what some I've heard reports of, as well as the Secret Service, why is that the case? Well, I think that's the case because they had both teams of counter snipers. We know that it was at least two on rooftops that were right next to each other. And so neither one of them had a clear shot or a clear view of that the rooftop that the shooter was on. So really, the flawless part of this that Dominic was talking about did not exist at all during this operation. And again, I keep going back to the fact that asking the question, why? Why was this major gap set there? Because when I say major, when you step back and you put all these parts there, everything that Dominic's talked about, everything I've talked about, it creates this funnel that even a blind sniper could take a shot from and have a good chance at hitting their target.
And the thing is, this was not the first Trump rally that he had done. In fact, he's been doing these for, I think we're going on year six of these. So it wouldn't be the first one. They should have us down to a routine, and it should be very tight. But as you pointed out, it wasn't flawless. It was so gaping. You have to wonder who's giving the directives. So, Dominique, let's talk about the director, because in September of 2022, Kimberly A. Cheadle was sworn in. She was the 27th director of the Secret Service. But this followed her retirement a year before, where she had worked for Pepsi. So she had been in the Secret Service. She got out to the private sector, which is what a lot do, because that's where you can make more money. But she had previously served on the Biden detail and came back as director at the President Biden's request. So that brings the question, should the director of the Secret Service be a political appointee?
They are. This goes all the way down to every level out there. People want to look at her on a federal level being a political appointee. You guys don't realize that your police chiefs are political appointees by your mayors. This is a root foundational problem in law enforcement across America. It's they put in who they want. And if you look, I've said this a million times. My former chief was the head of Lake County Major Crimes Task Force and a police chief, and he was a dispatcher with no police experience. So this happens everywhere in America. So, you know, you can't fault her, but you can fault the game. And yeah, it's politicized. And to be honest, if her subordinates were ever allowed to talk, you'd hear the reality about how she probably ran that agency.
Well, and I think internally it wasn't just her, but it was also the COO and the deputy director that I think people have questions for. Yet at this point, we still have just the director who has actually offered her resignation, forced almost because of her grilling that she had in front of Congress. But I want to go back to how the agency has handled things, because obviously there's also been pushback on female Secret Service agents. I want you to take a look at this video. It's gone viral as a female Secret Service agent, is seen here, seemingly unable to holster her gun. And then she takes it out, looks to be unsure of what she's supposed to be doing.
There's our favorite female.
And then once she arrives at the hospital with the former president.
Let's see what she does.
Other women are seen at the rally who were too short to actually protect a president that is, 6'4", from gunfire. Is it fair to say that Director Cheadle and some of the women assigned that day are a product of DEI, or the Diversity, Equality, and Inclusion Initiative? And was this woman even qualified for her position? Hot button issue for two men to ask. That's why I'm going to ask both of you to say it. Jonathan, you start.
I grew up with three sisters and no brothers. I got beat up by girls my whole life. That's probably why I became a SEAL. And I have no problem with strong women. Scotty, I know you. You're tall. So you would be way better if we trained you up tactically. And because I know you're an aggressive, strong woman, to put you in front of Donald Trump. But you can't put somebody who's 5'4", who can't pull weight. All of those individuals that were there, male or female, were not aggressive. Trump should have sustained an injury at least from getting yanked off that stage so fast. But even the tactical guys that came up there, they acted like they didn't know what to do. All three of those females didn't know what to do. And the whole thing was so chaotic that I would say people have to understand that DEI doesn't just mean females. It also means people who are not qualified. Because once you open the gate There's certain types of people that are going to take advantage of that. People who go, who graduate from Ivy League schools, people who have resumes that are stellar. And what they stopped looking for were guys like Izzo, guys like myself, who have experience in the military, in law enforcement. The Secret Service guys that I knew that guarded Clinton when he first went in office, I was in college working at the hotel where they stayed. They were all 6'3", 6'4", former military or state troopers, and they got up every day and ran 6 miles with Clinton and then went out and worked all day. They were aggressive, hard individuals who moved with lightning speed when they needed to. I don't know what that was, and DEI goes way further than just females. It's just a complete disaster. And by the way, say this one other thing. What Cheadle did in being with the Secret Service, getting out at a top level as an executive and then coming back into the federal government is another political game that gets played where they put people in these CEO or these presidential or vice president positions in companies, and then they bring them back in because they're loyalty. So that's a whole game. All those people know each other, and then you get this mess of a leader that's been around the Secret Service for 35 years. 35 years.
And listen, almost forget the fact of the gender issue, and it just seems like common sense. It's hard to take a bullet for somebody if that person still has 2 feet on you when the bullets are going towards you. Dominic, your thought on this, because Trump has gone back to doing these rallies, and despite increased security, it seems pretty typical, including putting the audience behind Trump while speaking. Do you think that was a smart idea, and what changes should actually have happened considering what has happened in the past? And do we have any reassurances that there are changes besides just seeing a few more vehicles and taller people guarding the president?
No, I can't talk on changes and details because, again, that's not my tactics background, and I won't even remotely, you know, pretend to insult what the Fed should do. But if I'm going to reinforce what Jonathan said, it's standards. The standards for law enforcement are so disgustingly low. I could say blanketly, and I do say it very publicly, in my opinion, I do not think that females should be involved in law enforcement. I just don't. But we have so many men out there. Thanks to lowering of standards and education and fitness. Hell, I'm 5'7". When I was a kid, there was no chance I was going to be a cop because they had a 5'8" requirement. And my mother warned me, just not going to happen. Thank God in the 90s, they got rid of that and I was able to become a cop. But when we start to open those doors to let in people that honestly you shouldn't have as police officers and you change the standard, well, now it's no longer like an elite calling. So people don't raise their level of standards to go in and their education, their fitness, their passion, and you get crap. DEI has just opened the floodgates for crap. I will be ragging on that woman. She was out of shape. She was not tactically sound. She was short. I shouldn't have been on that that detail if that was the case. So there's nothing wrong with having standards and saying, this is it. You don't reach our standards. End of story. But we're afraid to do that whatever the media or lawsuits are going to throw our way. So we just need to go back to standards, hardcore standards.
And there are places for female Secret Service agents. There's our wives, daughters. There are places that only females are able to go to protect those that need protection. So it's not like we're saying that women should not be in the Secret Service. That is not at all. But they should be just as trained. Exactly. Up to the level. Yeah. Jonathan,
standards,
Dominic.
Let me say this real quick. Standards are created by need. You do something, it doesn't work, you create a standard to do it better. Or if somebody else has a standard, you adopt their standard. If somebody needs to be 6'2", make that the standard. If they don't, then that's fine. In anything in law enforcement, whether you're doing investigations or street work or protecting somebody, aggression is the name of the game. Controlled aggression and determining what in protection, what height do you need and what skill set they need. Some skill sets go one way, some skill sets go another.
Well, I know the skill set that I need because we're about to take a break. So Jonathan, Dominic, you stay right here. Because when we return, we are going to discuss with our panel the role politics plays in the Secret Service. If you're expected to take a bullet for someone, are you expected to like them at least a little bit? We'll be back. Welcome back to Perspective. I'm your host, Skyno Hughes. Sadly, the only time we talk about what went wrong is when we follow something that goes wrong. Let's bring back in our panel. We have Jonathan Gillum, former Navy SEAL and FBI special agent, and Dominic Issa, former Chicago Air police officer. Thank you, gentlemen, for staying with us. So here is the million-dollar question, and obviously I don't know if you know the exact answer, and if you can apply the answer to every single agent that's currently, I think there's 3,400-plus a part of the Secret Service. Let's start with you, Dominic. Do you feel the majority of Secret Service agents on details can be non-political?
I would like to hope so, but I don't think it's possible today. I really don't. I think that with how we're just inundated nonstop, everything goes through our phones and our faces, I think it's impossible not to be political. I really do. I would like to hold on to the ideals of law enforcement and say that, you know, we can hang on to our passions and beliefs and still serve properly. I just don't know anymore. I really don't.
Well, it's interesting because it's not like that, you know, the media, they say we're not allowed to have opinions. We're going to have opinions, hence why we came in the media. And you want somebody who's a chef to actually like food, hence why they became a chef. So it's kind of interesting that, and these people that work with these protectees, as you definitely know this, Jonathan, you get to see who they're really like, not just what the TV screens are. And I've been surprised of what some of my friends in the service have come back and said. People like Bill Clinton was extremely favorable. Everybody got along with him, whether you like their politics or not. People like Vice President Mike Pence, not so much. So considering that the former director was a part of Jill Biden's detail, was friends with him, do you think it can be non-political, especially if they work directly with one of the candidates? And is it right for them to necessarily be the ones that assign the detail for the opponent of the person that brought them on the job in the first place?
So I agree with Izzo, but I will say this one thing is that an operator, somebody who is trained to an elite level that they are about the job, right? People who ignore the death factor and know that they are an aggressive part of an elite team that will do their job no matter what. Now, when you get that mindset, and it's not just a mindset, but you got to go through the training. You got to go through the training for a long period of time where you've trained the stress out. When something happens, you act, you don't react. So you can get to a level where you are concentrated on the job and you're concentrated on this, the office that this individual holds, right? And so in protection, I've protected a lot of people and I've protected fewer people that I like than I dislike. I'll put it to you that way. But I'm not there to like or not like them. However, when we look at the political nature of what we live in now, you go to the FBI, you go to the IRS, you go to the ATF, you go to the Secret Service now, you go to all these different agencies and the DOD, and what you get are people who put politics, if not even with their position and tactical position, but above, where you had a Secret Service agent when Trump was in that said she would in Colorado, she was an SAC, a special agent charge or assistant special agent charge, said she would not take a bullet for Trump. That is her sole job. She is living, breathing body armor. And so it does get in the way, especially at the higher levels of all these political agencies. And I think when you look at the way that Trump was treated with these details and with these lack of threat assessments, I think that's what you're going to end up seeing.
Well, that's the thing, Dominic. Obviously, law enforcement has come under scrutiny depending on an event that happens. In this case, do you think that it's been fair how Secret Service, the agency, has been treated throughout all of this? And should they hold the brunt? Or is this something that's the top brass down and those that are on the field are just following commands at the risk of losing their job?
No, I think all the pressure should be on everybody, rank and file, everybody. If we are not going to pressure test the living hell out of everybody, from our street cops to our federal agents, nothing in law enforcement would change. And right now, law enforcement is abysmal, all the way from last several years to this latest assassination attempt. No, we need to be pressuring the living hell, going back to what I said about standards for the people who are on the streets, on the details, in the command positions, the directors, I don't care. We need to hold everybody accountable as hard as we possibly can.
Well, I want to thank you, Jonathan Gillum. Jonathan, last word.
Scotty, I keep interrupting you at the end, but if you look at the Reagan detail when he got shot, you don't see individuals looking around as though they're making their job up. They shove him in the car, and then the individuals that are still there take control of that scene. You don't see people trying to put their sunglasses on and fix their jacket and stand at parade rest or not at parade rest. Should I holster? Guy, one of the tactical, the CAT team, supposed to be the elite of the Secret Service, goes on the stage and takes a knee and then gets back up. I don't even know what that was all about, why he would feel the need to do that. But when you look at Reagan and that era of Secret Service and how they worked, those are individuals that knew every part of their job, and they were cut from the cloth that needed to be wrapped around Reagan.
Well,
that's a difference.
And that is different. So it'll be interesting to see what changes happen. Time will tell, especially if you get Donald Trump back in office. You know, that's going to be one department that he will definitely look at. Jonathan Gillum, Dominic Izzo, thank you always for coming on and having a conversation.
You got it. Thank you.
Andrew Jackson, Abraham Lincoln, James A. Garfield, William McKinley, Theodore Roosevelt, John F. Kennedy, Ronald Reagan, and following the events of July 13th, Donald J. Trump can add his name to a list of United States presidents who have been targeted for assassination. Now, four U.S. presidents have been killed, the four others injured. And just like with everything else in time, the ability to protect the leader of the free world has greatly evolved. Open carriages and convertibles are instead replaced by heavily armored vehicles called the Beast. And instead of people being able to just walk up and listen to the president speak, now you must go through a series of screenings and metal detectors. If you want to get close to the stage, you'll have pre-submitted your name and Social Security number for a full background check. There are always going to be factors. However, if the situation is set up to fail from the beginning, then it is a miracle to stop something evil from happening. An evil that would have sparked more than just grieving, but anger, not only in the United States, but around the world. It should be no secret that when you are tasked with protecting the President of the United States, your service is not just to one person or even one country, but rather to keeping the peace for the global community. There should be nothing partisan about peace or its protection. But hey, that's just my perspective. I'm Skynell Hughes. Thanks for watching.